Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Did You Know? I am your host, John C. Abercrombie. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. I am a chemistry major in college and developed almost a hatred for history. And the reason that I did this, and the reason that this happened, is because I could see no useful use for the information that I was being given. As I sat in school for an hour or whatever a class period was, it was dull. It was boring, and I could see no possible use for that information. What was I going to do with information that came from the 1800s or the 17s or the 16s and happened in some faraway place with people that did not even look like me? And to be frank, it was somewhat boring to me. The first time I ever had an opportunity to listen to history that in any way intrigued me was after I had graduated from college, after I had been promoted to a supervisor and was in a leadership class that was being taught by an instructor that had attended West Point, the United States Military Academy. And I am, at this point, a little bit prejudiced towards that service academy because my son, daughter-in-law, and three grandsons have attended that school. But what this instructor did was to provide more than just the names of people, the places, and it was very stagnant the way that it was normally presented. And out of the end of this, I'm supposed to remember a name, a date, a place, and it's supposed to mean something to me. It just left me cold. It left me with feeling, I don't know, it just did not attract me in any form. But this particular instructor talked about a particular battle, why it was important, the lay of the land. You know, there's a hill here, there's a river there, there's a this, there's a that. And he talked about the significance of it. Now, when he did that, he emphasized points that he was making in classroom. But it was something more. It started to stir up a certain degree of excitement within me that I wished I had had when I was in school. I wished that I had a reason to want to know some of these facts. But as I have looked at them in later years, I began to understand something in addition to that. And that is most of the information that we are given is not accurate to a point. And that point means that we are not given all of the information that we need to understand what's going on. You know, I remember hearing about the Whiskey Rebellion. Well, I didn't drink. My parents didn't drink, so it meant absolutely nothing to me. It was an issue of taxation. But by going deeply into the story, we can begin to understand. We can begin to empathize. We can begin to have feelings of good feelings on one side and not so good on the other. As we proceed, I don't intend to do nothing but lecture in this discussion. I always hate that. And I give you an opportunity to ask questions. Many of you are on because you're listening on your device, your computer, your tablet, your phone. But that does not necessarily allow us an interchange. I have a screen that shows those people who have called in, but does not show those who are in by other means. Does not mean that you need to hang up or call back or anything else, because I love the audience. I love the opportunity of sharing experiences with you, because I believe history is a foundation. But in order to understand that foundation, we need to have true facts. It cannot be airbrushed. It needs to be the hard facts. We can come up with summaries. But in order for you to understand the significance of what's happening, we need to go into greater detail. Those of you that do have questions, comments, suggestions, disagree with me, or what have you, you can do that by calling the following number, area code 646-668-8217. I will give that number again during the broadcast. Like I said, you don't need to disconnect from what you've got unless you want to call in and be recognized. I can't see those of you that are listening. We get feedback that says that within the country and outside the country that we do have listeners. And I want to appeal to them to let us know what you want, what you like, what you don't like, what you would like to see emphasized or de-emphasized, because it is a show for you. Now, our topic today is about Ruby Bridges. Now, I, being older than most, remember Ruby Bridges, not personally, but I remember the time, I remember the situations there, and it happened, I believe, in 1955. And I was a student in school. I'm not sure that I fully understood what was going on, but this is why I want to talk to you about the situation that happened and what happened with Ruby Bridges. Is she integrated the Southern schools. She integrated schools in the South. Now, many people have no idea of why a black person would want to attend a white school. Let me tell you this. When we look at financial figures, we go where the money goes, and we find that anywhere from 2 to 10 times as much is being spent on the white schools is on the black schools. When I attended schools, the books that we got were hand-me-downs from the white schools. The white kids had had them. They had written in them. Hopefully most of that was erased, but occasionally some very derogatory things came through on the books that we were being given to learn. You cannot go through an educational system completely neutral when it is not neutral. When we had the Plessy v. Ferguson case come up, it is one that Frederick Douglass said don't take, because the simplicity and the results that could come out of it. Let me explain that very quickly, and we'll get into Ruby Bridges. I don't intend to bypass that. But what set up this situation, Homer Plessy looked like a white man. His hair, his complexion, nothing on his body let you know that he had any black blood. But of his grandparents, or great-grandparents, excuse me, of them, 7 were white, 1 was black. Under law, not by appearance, not by anything else, he was considered to be a black person. What they were trying to show was that the streetcar conductor, or the train conductor, had to make a decision on every person coming in, which was absurd on its face. Many people didn't realize this. The outcome is that we got the separate but equal philosophy. Separate but equal. Now, it was definitely separate, but not always equal. We look at Elizabeth Jennings in 1850, was physically thrown off of a streetcar in New York City as she was on her way to church in her church finery as the organist of that, because she didn't want to sit in the colored car, which is where they put drunks, where they put people that were smoking and other undesirable people. She had to pay full price no matter where she sat. She and another lady are in their finest and are told to get off the streetcar. That was, by definition then, it was separate but equal, because I guess they could ride. But they're going to get off going into a church smelling like smoke, stale liquor, whatever may have been in that car. And besides, who would want to be in that company when you could be in an upgraded company? Elizabeth Jennings' father, person that invented dry cleaning, which we use today, but she, as a woman, was physically thrown off of the streetcar. When we look at Harriet Tubman, she had her arm broken for the same reason. They were separate, but they were not equal. When you look at the case that reversed the Plessy v. Ferguson case, and that was Brown, one of the cases came out of Virginia, and it was filed by a student. And if you want to know more about that, you can use one of our links on AmazingBlackHistory.com to shop Amazon. And the title of that book is Tar Paper Schools. In fact, you can look up the article, which is on, it's on a segment that we did on Brown. Brown was actually five cases folded in, and Barbara Rose John was the only student-led revolution that went in there. Some of these schools were so bad that on rainy days, students had to open umbrellas in class to keep the rain from making the ink on their papers run. And that is supposed to be separate but equal. So, yes, we wanted our kids to have the better education, but nobody was going to spend money in the black schools. Had they done so, things may have been completely different. But in order to get first-rate education, you had to go where the money was being spent. Not that money equates into everything being better, but the accommodations were so much better. I remember in my lifetime going to school and the teachers having to get there early so they could build a fire in the stove. The other schools didn't have to do that. There was a time when it was necessary, but we had long since passed that time. So in the case of Ruby Bridges, her parents wanted better for her. And this is what most parents want for their children, a better life, a better chance and opportunity. Black people have always supported education, always, from way back. We have less support now than we had in the days of slavery before and after. Why? Because we understood that knowledge is king, knowledge is power, and we wanted it like anybody else. You must understand that the reason they did not want us to have an education is because we could read then, we could study, we could find out that we came from some very important people, that we came from civilized people, soon to be published, or to be published on the blog, AmazingBlackHistory.com, which we post new information on every Thursday, every Thursday. We're going to talk about Timbuktu. Timbuktu, which many people refer to as the end of the earth because it is difficult to get to. But it was an important center on a trade route. It, in those times, was a city of about 10,000 people. And of them, fully 25% were scholars. Now, this should chill you, because what you've been told by people that you respect, by people that were educated, is the fact that we are a bunch of uncivilized savages out in the middle of nowhere that could not survive without the benevolence of Europeans. This is absolutely not true. And so we find a situation in which also, if we could read and communicate, we can put our story out there. Other people could understand the savagery, the brutality, the inhumanity of slavery. And that's not what anybody wanted to hear. Because we, the wealth of this country was built on the backs of slaves, on the backs of slaves. Many of them were brought over from Angola, and that's another topic that we will be talking about. And many of us have roots that go back to Angola and other countries on the west coast of Africa and Central Africa, West Central Africa. Because it was a money-making proposition, this was like coming up to someone and saying, hey, I tell you what, I'll give you a new car if you turn in your neighbor. I mean, there are people listening right now that have to think whether they would or wouldn't do it. And there are many, which I consider to be shameful, that would do it in a heartbeat. Basically, this is what happened. Slaves are responsible for over half of the gross national product of the entire country. So, yes, you would want your child to have an opportunity to do that. So what happened is the parents of Ruby Bridges, I think they had five or six children. Her mother was more prone to this than her father was. And the reason for that is because her father knew the dangers of doing this. The danger of what? The danger of sending your white kid, I mean your black kid, to a white school if they could be admitted at all, or if they would be admitted at all. We have such a deep-rooted hatred in this country, deep, deep-rooted hatred. I believe within 1908 or thereabouts. The superintendent of the New Orleans schools was almost fired, because he allowed students from the institutions there to participate in the National Spelling Bee. And what was so bad about that? Actually, a black person won the event, but was disqualified for some picayune reason. That is what has happened. These are the divergent opinions and views that have distorted life in America. They understood what happened. And when you get to the point of understanding what happened to her family, Ruby Bridges' family, you'll begin to see some of this. There are questions that should come to your mind about why did this happen and why didn't that happen. Ruby Bridges is 6 years old. Her parents want more for her. So they make an attempt to enroll her in a white school. Now, when we look at this, it's more than just wanting to sit up next to a white kid It's much more than that. Because when we look at the Brown case, we find that this young 6-year-old girl had to walk past a white school in order to cross an active train switching yard, which is dangerous even for adults, in the early dark hours to go and then walk an additional mile to be picked up by a bus to take her to a black school. Now, there are many reasons not to want to do that, including the hazard of crossing train tracks in almost darkness. But that's what was required because they had to keep people separate. And so this is where we come up with Brown. And so we see the hardships that are imposed on black kids. When I was in school, there were many communities that did not have opportunities for black kids. I had a cousin who had to catch the bus at Old Dark 30 and didn't get home until dark because there was one school, one high school for blacks in the entire county. Several for white kids. My mother, they were about 8 miles from town. This is the same house my cousin was living in. And as you can imagine, there are times when they are almost cloudburst. They were standing there waiting on the black bus. The white bus went by and stopped. Let them get on, but not past that white line. They had to stand down in that stairwell. And he did not get off the road to take them to their school. They had to run to that. But for that act of kindness, that white man was fired. So you couldn't show kindness to anybody, or you would be ostracized. Even white people was subject to being ostracized. Farmers may find that the seed store wouldn't sell them seed, or the repair shop would not repair or sell them parts. Yes, we're talking about America, a civilized first-rate country. We're not talking about a second-rate, third-rate country. We're talking about here in America. So the decision was made to send or to have Ruby apply, or they applied on behalf of Ruby to attend the schools. Now, the family had moved a couple of times, and I believe at this time they were in New Orleans. And any student, all of the students attending the white school were white, and all they had to do is register. But we begin to see something happen here that we don't normally see. In order to be admitted into the school, they tested all of the black students that had applied. There were four. Ruby went to one school by herself. Three students were assigned to another school. They had to pass the test. This is similar to what we see imposed in many other situations. For example, the grandfather clause. Most people don't think of it as a racial tool, but it is. And let me explain that to you. When voting became available to blacks, many or most of the southern states imposed requirements, educational requirements. They would ask questions. And while it may seem an absurd question, it may include such things as how many bubbles in a bar of soap. This was what you needed to know in order to vote. Now, the people asking the question probably had less of an idea than the people they were asking the question of. But what they had determined is that at this point, if your grandfather could vote, and remember, they were only allowing white people to vote, that you could vote. In other words, that is based on race. But they found a way to make it look like, oh, it's just a thing. If they could, you could. But then they were doing everything possible to make sure that nobody else had the right to vote. So it was a legal way around. Now, we get into a lot of discussions about history versus critical race theory. Critical race theory is a legal concept, legal as in law, that we do not teach in elementary, middle, or even high school. And in most cases, not even on a college level. But everybody has to make big fuss about that particular concept. So what we do is we allow people to do things, and when we don't want them to do it, we impose restrictions and regulations. So when Ruby had taken the test and passed it, and the court said, she must be admitted, she was admitted. But we remember governors, and I believe it was Faubus in this case, said, no, ain't going to happen. They allowed Ruby to go to school, but she had to be escorted by federal marshals. Why? Why did a six-year-old have to be escorted to school? Because large crowds would gather. And when she went through that line, they would yell, hostile, very unkind, very unchristian comments at her. They called her everything but a child of God. And it was difficult to imagine the six-year-old being subjected to that. I grew up Christian, but I wonder from the depth of my heart, isn't there a white Christian anywhere in the world? Somebody that would stand up and say, that is not right. No, that person did not exist. In fact, it was such a hostile crowd that two people are singled out in the example that I'm going to give you. One person that was there morning and night when she went to school, when she came out, holding a coffin with a black kid in it. Now, is that a good sign? No, let me tell you, it is not a good sign. When Ruby went to school that year, she was in a class by herself because only one teacher in the entire school would agree to teach her. That teacher formed a bond with Ruby, and they have been great friends for years. But she had worked in Boston, and she agreed to do this. So Ruby is in a classroom of one. Now, parents, not just in that classroom, but in the entirety of the school, remove their kids rather than even allow them to be in a building where there was a black student, which, in my opinion, is stupid because they more than likely had black custodians, black people that they could put in subservient positions, which is okay as long as you don't learn anything. Ruby was a good student, and she was able to work on a one-on-one ratio. Now, the other person that was in that group was always making the boast that she would poison Ruby. Therefore, the federal marshals would not allow her to eat any of the food prepared by the school. She had to bring it with her from home. Now, I did that, but it was not a forced requirement on me because somebody was yelling and screaming at me morning and evening that they were going to basically kill me. Now, what do you think this does for a six-year-old girl, a six-year-old student who is going to learn and seeing the hostility expressed? Men, women, and children all jumping in your face saying you don't belong here. She was doing the work. She was capable of doing it. It was the interference from the white parents for whatever reason. God only knows. But they were given wrong information on which to base their position on. Understand here. Now look. In many cases, I can't blame them because they were given false information. Our educational system is filled with false information. And it's only getting worse because we cannot learn certain points of view because people want to censor all of our books and they want to remove them for the inanest of reasons. That means the dumbest of reasons. All because, now, they're not teachers. They don't understand. Most of them haven't read the book. I was listening to National Public Radio 2, maybe 3 weeks ago, and I see where many people are canceling libraries, shutting them down. In one case, the librarian is in Idaho. And a parent came in and asked, do you have this book? And the library did not have that book. But this parent built up a large following, and they demanded that the book never be purchased. It got to the point where some towns, counties, whatever, are canceling their public libraries because of a non-existent book. This shows how deep the hatred of everything has gotten. We as adults cannot sit down and discuss a question, a comment, a point of view without going to blows. It's a sad day. But let me tell you about a situation that Ruby faced as she went back and forth, escorted by the four marshals to ensure her safety and possibly even the safety of the crowd. One day, as her teacher is looking out the window, the marshals are escorting Ruby to the school, and they made sure that she was in, that she was where she was, because kids in other classes would not come to that classroom. So here's a six-year-old isolated all day. But her teacher would sometimes take her to other classrooms and allow her to play. And she talked about one incident where she went in and a white kid said, I can't play with you because my mother says that I can't play with a nigger. Now, this is the type of thing that was going. But to Ruby at the time, it was honest. It was refreshing. Because she said if her parents had told her something like that, she wouldn't have done it either. But this shows where we start to instill the concept of race, racial superiority of one race over another, that we have those situations happening. All of it on both sides is based on faulty information. Anyway, as Ruby is being escorted to school, she pauses in front of these people. Now understand, There's a woman with the coffin and a baby in. There's this other woman ranting and raving about wanting to poison her. In other words, kill a six-year-old. So much hatred and hostility that she wants to kill and make sure that everybody knows that she will kill a six-year-old. Ruby stopped, and the teacher could see her mouth moving. She is fearful for this kid's safety. What in the world is she doing? So when she got in class, the teacher asked her about it, and Ruby finally told her that every day before she crossed that line going into the school and before she crossed that line going home, she had a ritual. I don't know if she knew it was a ritual, but she had a practice. And that practice was to pray for that mob. Six-year-old, praying for the mob that hated her very existence. And you think that Ruby is the only one to pay a price? No. I want to show you the far-reaching tentacles of racism. Ruby's parents didn't even live in that city. They lived miles and miles away. And they were sharecroppers, or should I say exploited farmers. And the reason I say exploited is because, remember, they didn't want you to read or write. You'd go into partnership with somebody, the white landowner, and he would extend credit to you. Even buying products at retail, he would mark them up 30 to 60% and charge you that plus interest so that at the end of the year, you made nothing. Ruby's grandparents had sharecropped on their one piece of land for 25 years. 25 years. Now, you know they have some age on them because this is their granddaughter. Not their daughter, their granddaughter. You know what happened to them? They were put off that property. They have no property. They have no savings. They have no means of support. They are put off of that property as grandparents, as punishment, so that not only they, but the entire community saw what would happen to you if you wanted something better for your kids. Now, everybody wants something better for their kids than they had. And these people were no different. We get the impression from history that people accepted these conditions. They don't tell you about the people that did not. This is why we have over 4,000 documented lynchings of black people in America. 4,000. And it's taken over 100 years in an attempt to make lynching a federal crime. Even more serious than murder is the fact that what you've done is denied these people access to the justice system. There is no trial. There may not be anything other than an accusation. And these people are killed, tortured, burned alive, mutilated, body parts taken for souvenirs. These events are often held in public squares and the event publicized in the newspaper. But all of a sudden they broke into the jail and took them out and did this. This is not something witnessed by people in the community. Many times these were festive events where they brought men, women, and children together to watch this kind of barbarity, this kind of hatred. These are things that you had to be aware of. This is why they were done, with the purpose of intimidating an entire group of people. You talk about terrorism. This is terrorism. So you have adults standing there wishing death on a child, and nothing is done. This is not the first case. Hopefully it would be the last, but I am not quite that optimistic, although I consider myself to be an optimistic person. This is what happened. Her parents were let go of their jobs. There were all manner of hostility expressed by people. Some people that didn't even have to be associated with the family were fired. Nowhere to go. Laws had been on the books that prevented people from purchasing land. You know, we come to this great myth that everybody had the same chance in America because our models say that. We even talk about the inscription on the Statue of Liberty that says, send me your tired, your poor masses. The most significant line of that poem is the one immediately above it, which says, in essence, you keep your best and send us these people. We are a land of opportunity, except if your skin is dark. That is hypocritical. It is hypocritical from beginning to end. Yet this is what Ruby Bridges was subjected to. But what she was doing was opening a door not only for herself, but for an entire race of people. Now, I think some of the vestiges of that hatred still remain. Because when the schools were finally integrated, I think many white people, good-natured maybe, but felt that they were being punished because now they had to treat people that they are being told can't learn, can't. When you begin to understand how deep that is and how very ignorant that statement is, because and now as we have gone through or are going through a pandemic, now the difference between a pandemic and an epidemic is bad, but it usually is in a localized area. Pandemic covers vast areas, and in this case, the world. The very concept of vaccination was introduced to America by an African slave called Onesimus, owned by Cotton Mather. And they had been doing vaccinations in Africa before that time. And this took place in the early 1700s, early 1700s, if not before, when it was introduced here. Cotton Mather and a doctor proved that it was a significant lifesaver because they found people that were willing to get vaccinated. People that were vaccinated as opposed to those that weren't, the epidemic was smallpox, or the pandemic was smallpox. 14 out of 100 died that were unvaccinated. Of those that were vaccinated, 2. And this is knowledge that came out of Africa. We do our best to dumb down these people, so much so that the people affected, people of color, don't realize that they have done such significant things because it's kept from them. It's kept a secret. And that secret has kept America and the world from much of the advances that could have taken place. Should everything be on a level playing field? Should everybody have the opportunity to advance, to give their contributions? I went in last week, got my flu shot and got my last booster. Yes, I believe in it. Are there possibilities something could happen? Yes, but I think they're very small. Very, very small. I am willing to put my life there. I've taken them all of my life. And you have the right to decide what you do. You have that right. So your refusal, while it may kill somebody else, may even kill you, is your decision. We have the ability to have that right in this country. This is one of the things that we stood up for. So what Bridges did was open a door to an entire generation. But I don't think that we've gotten full benefit of it because many people still have vestiges of that hostility still remaining today because they don't know what we have done. When we look at one of the best life-saving options that we have on this planet, it is blood transfusions. People that are injured often go into shock, and this is why it was developed, because we were losing people on the battlefield that we didn't need to lose until Dr. Charles Drew, a black, developed a system of storing blood. The first kidney transplant between two people that were not identical twins was performed by another black doctor. The first successful open heart surgery was performed by a black doctor. And that patient lived for decades afterwards. Should everybody go to a black doctor? No. When I have the opportunity to go, do I? Yes. But it's a personal choice. If I cannot talk to my doctor and get reasonable, intelligent responses, that's not my doctor any longer. I don't care about the superficial aspects of it, such as the color person's skin. I sometimes refer to it as male, but I have female doctors. In fact, I'm picking up a new one early next month. When we deprive ourselves, we often deprive society. Ruby Bridges has a couple of books. If you go to AmazingBlackHistory.com, you can read the story of Ruby Bridges. You can see videos about events where people are talking about it. In fact, where she is even talking about it. There are books there. And you can sample those books. They're purchased through Amazon. There are links that take you there. We ask that you do this because we can help ourselves. This is a win-win situation. You can sample that book. If it's an Audible book, listen to 5 minutes of it. If it's electronic, I believe they give you part of a chapter. See if you like it, if you engage with it. This is better than going to a bookstore and spending that much time reading each and every book to make your decision. If you do an electronic book or an Audible book, you can get it instantly. I was talking to a friend the other day on a book that I am currently reading or listening to on Audible. He had a copy of the book. I looked at the copy of the book. He recommended the book. And while I was talking to him, I ordered it and had it and could start listening while we were going through the conversation. He barely noticed. I told him I had it. I was going to read it. And I'm reading it now. This is what we do to try to make information available to you. One of our partners is Amazon. And those of you that shop on Amazon, we wish that you would use one of our links anytime and every time that you shop there. It's not necessary to buy the item in the link, but it is important that you use the link to get there. It doesn't cost you anything. They don't change the price of what you order, pay the royalty to me. It's small, but every little bit helps. This is a win-win because we expose you to information that you may never have otherwise seen, even information that you have. We have over 250 posts and counting, and we want to hear from you. What topics do you want us to talk about? What would you like us to focus on? Do you have questions? Do you have comments? We want to hear them because that's what the show is for. It's dedicated to you. Let me give you this number again because very shortly we're going to open the mic if anybody has any questions. And that number is 646-668-8217. Area code 646-668-8217. So you see in the case where the parents want what every other parent wants, a better future for their child. And by doing this, the grandparents who have been in a exploitive position or exploited position for 25 years are thrown out in the middle of the night with nowhere to go, probably becoming old and infirmed, and their ability to take care of themselves is diminished. But this was the punishment for even having somebody in their family try to advance themselves, try to make something better of themselves. As you go into the videos, because when you go to AmazingBlackHistory.com, there's a search bar, but in most browsers, you will see the last four or five posts that are up there. But if you want to see them all, click blog list, and it'll show you. And you can see very deeply into people, places, and events that you may never have heard of before. You may have heard of them and want to know more about them. I had a friend that sent me a name, and it turned out to be that of a black female nurse during the Civil War. And she was so beloved by the white soldiers that she was taken care of that they invited her to live in their town after the war. And when she applied for a pension and it was denied, they all came to her defense. She was beloved, and she was able to get that pension. Yes, she was able to get that pension because of the dedication that she had shown to not only those soldiers, but to the cause that they were fighting for. When you realize that over 700,000 people in this country lost their life in that battle, and you know why it is the way it is today? Because they never fully implemented what they should, what they gained during the war. When Abraham Lincoln was killed, it was part of a group that was going to get rid of the federal government. That day, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States, Andrew Jackson, Vice President, and Seward, who was the next in line, were all scheduled to be assassinated. Only Lincoln was assassinated. Andrew Johnson was from the South and immediately began disassembling the gains of that war, that hard-fought battle. And it was finally ended when Rutherford B. Hayes, who did not win the popular vote, made a deal that he would take federal troops out of the South. The purpose that they were there for was to allow black people the opportunity to gain equality in citizenship. They started by disallowing the vote. And so many of our laws, this is why people should be up in arms over anything that disenfranchises people. We have so many people that are being disenfranchised for whatever reason. The reason, I can tell you, I can sum it up, it's power. People want to be in power. How can a president win when he does not have the majority of the vote? I'll tell you how. The Electoral College. Sounds decent. But when you look at Wyoming, for example, that has 600,000 people, when it comes to the Senate, they have two senators. Look at California. 40 million people. They only have two senators. When we look at Washington, D.C., 700,000 people, more than the entire state of Wyoming, yet they get no representation. This is why you see on their license plate, taxation without representation. We need to be cautious. Ruby Bridges brought attention to something. And as you look at her as a woman now, she has contributed much, much more than a six-year-old praying for people that are wishing death and destruction upon her. This, love wins, but it is very, very difficult to do so. Ruby Bridges opened the door for many people to get a much better education than they had before. Not that they couldn't do, people wouldn't allow them to do. People would not. I didn't go into teaching, and I'll tell you why. Because I felt that by example, I could have a classroom full of people that could excel in any aspect of science, any, and I'd put them up against anybody around. But being from the South, I did not think that that would fly, that they would allow that to happen. Some excuse would come up that would end that particular career. Those days should be over. They should be over. We should allow people their head. That is to follow their dreams, to follow their aspirations, to achieve the greatness that was bestowed upon them by their Creator. This is what is referred to by Emma Lazarus' poem. You keep your best. Send us the rest, and we will make them the best anywhere in the world. This is what's meant. When we look at history and we don't get the full picture, we cannot build a solid castle on that foundation. It doesn't say that the foundation has to be leveled, but we will level it up. But we must start with the true facts. What we're starting with, folks, are not the full and true and complete story of our history. If there is any revision taking place, it's that which we see. Because authors write for an audience. And in many of those cases, the authors know that should they tell the full story, their books are not going to sell. They're not going to be approved by the school district or what have you. It's shameful, but this is what we have allowed to happen. This is why we spend time discussing with you these matters. I don't see anybody having called in We will continue discussion for a few more minutes, and at that time we will call the end of the program, because we want to be responsive to you, your questions, your suggestions. Many times we have questions that we just don't ask. I went through school and probably could have learned 2-3 times as much had I had enough nerve to ask questions. In this case, we don't know who you are, but I tell you, be respectful. Don't want a bunch of hate speech. Don't want a bunch of profanity. This is an adult show. That does not mean that you have to be old in order to call. No, because children have questions too. In this case, we see a young lady that was dedicated to her own development, who was willing to pray for people who wished harm on her. There are more people like this. Let me tell you something else that history has done. History has a lot of you carrying baggage that you don't need to carry. And what I mean by that is when we come together, two races, and all races in between, we look at you either a slave or a slave owner. Not true on either side. We find that the number of the percentage of white people in this country that own slaves is 2%. Even in areas of the greatest concentration, it only went up approaching 6%. Yet we have people who are afraid or ashamed to talk about race for fear that they will be considered as having descended from slave owners. I don't hold you responsible for that. History makes you feel that way. My only concern now is we are here now. How do we rescue ourselves? We rescue ourselves with frank, honest, open discussion. You don't know the way I feel. I don't know the way you feel. But if you're sitting there feeling guilty for something you didn't do, speak up. Speak up. We don't have to get into a cussing contest or a waste-throwing contest or anything. This is where our dedication lies. This is where it comes from. Folks, I don't see anybody that has called in because at this point we would do so. Hang on, let me read a little comment. Let me do one thing here, and if I lose you, I hope to see you again next week. But I am going to refresh my screen in case somebody is called in, because I don't even see my call on the list. I hope that we are still connected. Yes, we are. Okay. Oh, I do see that we have a person. I think that is my friend, Marshall James.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you? I didn't see you.
Yes, sir. Doing fine. I got to tune in to you a little bit late. Had to make a run and know how that goes, but certainly enjoying the message today. Ms. Bridges, that young lady, and how she was so determined. And it made me think about when we were integrated to schools, and a lot of people thought that we wanted to be there with the white kids. It wasn't that. It was that the books we were using was hand-me-down books, and you know what was written on it in every book that we had, because all of the books we had in the black schools was hand-me-down books. So we wanted better books and better things to work with. We finally got some typewriters, and they was all run down. The typewriter Underwood and Royal, they was out there every day trying to keep the typewriters going. So I'm a part of what you were talking about, the young lady, how she struggled in school just to even be there, just to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And the school that we taken over at that time was out here at Florence Chapel, where the whites condemned the school, said that they were not going to send their children to that school. That's why they built Burn School. They were not going to send their kids there to school because they could hear the floor cracking when you walked across the, it was a two-story building, when we stayed in there 20 years after we got in the school. But they
right.
were not going to stay in there any longer. So those are
now,
some of the things that we've had to go through in trying to get an education here in this good old America that we live in.
Yeah, now let me tell you a story. When I had moved away from here and wanted to come back, Burns High School always had a great football team.
Sure.
But I was bound and determined that I was not going to send my kids to Burns High School. And the reason was James Francis Burns was
James
a great
Burns. That's right.
Who became governor of South Carolina. Now, we honor those people and, you know, expect that we're going to go there and be welcomed. You know, it may be, but I just had a bad taste in my mouth just hearing that man's name. Francis Burns, no.
And I was one with the NAACP. I was at every meeting that they had to get done away with the Confederate flag and old yellow, the flag. Burns High School. I was at every meeting that they had there concerning getting rid of the Confederate flag. Every one of them,
mm-hmm.
I was there. Yes, sir. And in fact, I even helped build Burns High School.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, Renz Construction out of Greenville, they the one that built Burns High School.
Now, one thing that people always talk about, that being the Confederate flag, that's not the Confederate flag. That's
right,
the Confederate
flag.
And it started in Upper Virginia because they couldn't distinguish their flag from the American flag. And every time as a kid that I would see somebody get lynched, when a man by the name of Bird was dragged behind a car until he was dead, those types of things.
Remember that.
You always saw that Confederate flag, but nobody ever stood up and said, that's not what that flag stands for. Nobody. To this day, it leaves a different taste in my mouth than it does in me. Anyway, I am so glad to hear from you. Hope everybody on that end is doing well.
Yes, everybody's doing good. Everybody's doing good. Hope everybody on your end is doing well.
Yeah, we're doing well, and I appreciate it. I'll let you know what we're going to talk about next week. But are you still there? I think we lost Marshall. Anyway, to my friends, it has been a pleasure to be with you. I hope that you've been able to learn something. I hope that you lose your shyness and call in. We will be back next week, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and all points in between, and even outside of that, because we have listeners in the Northern Hemisphere, the Southern Hemisphere, the Eastern Hemisphere, the Western Hemisphere, all over the world. Join us. It's been my pleasure. The program is Did You Know? Success Leaves Footprints. And what we try to do is gently lift all of the garbage that's deposited on them, let the facts remain true, and present them to you. It's been my pleasure, and I'll see you again next week. Be blessed, my friends. Be blessed.